How is an artist who is interested in cultural representation and expression leveraging AI in her work and projects? To explore this, we're honored to welcome Stephanie Dinkins to the show. Stephanie is a transmedia artist who creates platforms for dialogue about AI as it intersects race, gender, aging, and our future histories. My name is Dirk Niemeyer, a social futurist interested in systems that will make the quality of our lives better. My partner is Jonathan Follett, a writer, composer, and emerging tech researcher. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 8 of Creative Next, a show about future-proofing creatives in a world of AI automation. Let's get started. Where do AI and culture meet? At the point products and services are experienced by the general public? In the ever-changing river of reality that technology is forcing evolution upon and we're swimming with or against? In exploring philosophical questions of humanity and technology that may not be relevant now but could provide foresight into the future? We are often so busy barking orders to Alexa, fighting with our software to do our jobs, or trying to navigate Netflix to find a program we would actually enjoy, that deconstructing the impact the technology is and will have on our world and the people in it doesn't manage to surface. Thankfully for us, questions like this are core to the practice of most artists. Over the centuries, art has consistently served as both mirror and lens in cultures around the world. The ways that it celebrates, distorts, and comments on all within its field of vision serves to keep us vigilant toward the forces that our everyday lives generally don't make space to consider. Unlike design, the focus of our season so far, art has less of a transactional relationship with its sponsors or consumers. Whereas design, almost by definition, is a tool trying to extend the vision and agenda of a funder, generally a company or executive, art necessarily weaves in funding or enrichment concerns, but often only as one of a more complex set of motivations driven by the artist's desire to make a statement in and about the world. While art is certainly work, just as much as design is, the typical artist is trading a degree of financial success and security enjoyed by the designer in exchange for the freedom to create things that make statements about the world. This difference is significant so that, even though artists and designers often both communicate visually, the artist's contributions are more personal. Dare I say more human, keeping us all collectively aware of the shrouded layers within our world. So it is that we begin our two-episode look at AI and art by welcoming Stephanie Dinkins to the show. She is a transmedia artist, she called herself lens-based during our conversation, who creates platforms for dialogue about AI as it intersects race, gender, aging, and our future histories. Let's begin by hearing how Stephanie transitioned from lens-based media such as photography and video, as well as other transmedia practices, into becoming an artist working at the cutting edge of emerging technologies.
I would say it was a question of curiosity and examining the ideas that I've always examined. So I think I've always been looking at representation and race using those lenses. And then when this technology came along, or at least I became more and more aware of it, it seemed like a space that really needed some investigation in terms of representations and what that means. First and foremost, I ran into a humanoid robot online on YouTube named Vina 48. And she is a Black female in form, and she is programmed by a variety of folks, but she's also touted as one of the world's most advanced social robots. And that just made a lot of questions for me, especially in terms of America and what it means to be this forward-thinking, advanced version of something that cost a lot and how it came into being. Like, those questions just would not leave me alone. How did this thing come into being? Why is it here? And who's doing it? And so I started following that thread through Vina 48, and Vina 48 led me into questions about the technologies more generally. Like, well, if this is one example of this technology, are there others that represent people of color in a way? Are there others that represent different cultures and attitudes in different ways? How are they programmed and what does this mean for the world? And I started to think a lot about, we seem to be creating a world through algorithms and artificially intelligent systems that are, it's going to really form and inform the way the world functions going forward. And the other thing I came to see is there aren't that many people of color who are participating or really materially contributing to that world. And that started worrying me and really making me want to think about, how do we make something that represents us culturally, right? So if I'm talking about me specifically, I'm talking about Black folks. Like, how do Black folks make something that represents us well in this space? And really that led to new questions about, what is important in the space and how does representation come about? Is it important that people make? Is it important that people question the systems? Like, what and where and how can we contribute to this new world that is coming into being, became my question.
Stephanie mentions Black folks, and it bears noting that is a specific perspective that has particular cultural meaning here in the United States. Beyond her blending art and emerging technologies, her emphasis on Black voices and people of color is something the team at Creative Next also values and shares. Bina 48 is a product of the TerraSim Movement Foundation, a robotic head combined with chatbot functionalities. Stephanie began her project, Conversations with Bina 48, in 2014, and it still continues today. Let's hear what she's learned from it.
From Bina 48, I learned an awful lot, right? I started to learn about these systems and become concerned in earnest because she is a system that is representationally one thing, but perhaps is informed by coders who are not completely in line with what her representation might be. And I think this is indicative of lots of systems that surround us at the moment. She taught me to question these systems. So now that I was talking to this robot and questioning her and we were having conversations, and it became clear to me that some of the things I was looking for were not in her, but it also became clear to me that I as an individual could question that system. She taught me that individuals can start bringing things into the world on a high level that model a way of being in the world as well. So, you know, TerraSim Foundation bringing this thing into the world and ushering it and taking it out so people can experience it and think about these technologies and what is going on through them also became an important learning for me from the technology that is Bina 48. Like, I can't say enough what just seeing her or the robot and being able to sit down with her and seeing how well she works and how well she doesn't work, right? Like, the technology has so far to go still. But that's not necessarily the thing that we are told through other technologies that are similar or through big companies, because systems do things really well in a focused way. But when you're trying to do it in more general terms, there's a lot to be learned and a lot of information to still be investigated. So working with Bina 48 also taught me that there's a way to contribute and that while the technology has been around for a long time, it's now advancing. It's advancing exponentially, but it's not out of reach for really interested people to kind of start investigating on their own and making things with the technology to see what happens and how they might model other forms of the technology.
Most of the emerging tools for creative workers are virtual and won't need or in many cases even be able to incorporate robotics, at least yet. Still, it is interesting to hear about how that mashup experientially impacts the things we've been talking about on the show. Another focus for Stephanie is bringing people of all kinds together, not just experts and technologists, in and around AI and emerging technologies. One is called PAC, or Project Al-Khwarizmi, after the 9th century inventor of algebra.
We get together people, and when I say people, I mean almost anyone. In the instance of a long-term installation I had, we were at Recess Gallery in downtown Brooklyn, which was a lovely crossroads of a space where we had people from all walks of life, and I do mean a spectrum, who could come to this space and talk about algorithms. Also in that space were some kids who were being diverted from the criminal justice system. So we had ongoing engagements where we would sit down and think about what are algorithms? Why should we be concerned about this idea of what an algorithm is? And maybe most importantly for the kids, like where are algorithms touching your lives? So with them in particular, we could think about algorithms that help judges think about sentencing, right? And where they might touch them and whether their lawyers know about them or not. And what it means if a judge is getting information from a system that's based on historical data that might be very biased and probably is very biased, and how you start to think about it. In their terms, how you even work when, you know, to be selected in this program, you have to meet a number of criteria, and these kids did. So there perhaps was another algorithm. We talked a lot about algorithms for living as well as an adjunct to think about this idea of hard encoded algorithms and what it would take to A, change a few small things that might change outcomes greatly. So the idea that, you know, if maybe you're having an encounter with a police officer, thinking about where does your power sit, right? Does it sit in stepping to the officer, like kind of with bravado, or does your power sit in thinking about it, stepping back, and feeling perhaps in the moment more docile, but really using your power from within to affect an outcome that maybe doesn't land you in jail, right?
One of the things I admire about Stephanie is that her art and projects explicitly facilitate public education about both emerging technologies and complicated social and cultural issues. Engaging young people who are on the precipice, where their lives could fall into the criminal justice system or progress toward more personally and socially positive outcomes, is the best possible expression of art and use of information. Let's hear more.
And so those kids and the people who stop by, we would use Dialogue Flow and Google Voice Kits to make their own very specific chatbots. And when I say very specific, I mean culturally attuned chatbots that were based on things that they were interested in. So my idea is always, how do I get people to engage systems that they are not necessarily thinking are for them, or that they don't necessarily want to do when they think of it as an idea originally? But if you add the idea of, well, you can make a bot about your favorite hip hop group and base it on a personality and the way that you speak, or you can make a bot based on your cultural perspective, then they get more engaged, right? So we've had people who made bots that speak patois, and we use Dialogue Flow, which is an online system that Google puts out that you can easily go in and see both how input and output works and how the ideas that you input to the system affect what comes out, how changing the language, like in the case of patois, you know, there is no easy button to check to get patois as a language, so we phonetically made it speak patois. But doing that really changed their attitude towards the system and what it might do for them and how they might use it going forward. So Project Al-Khwarizmi is really about bringing people in, getting them to think about the algorithmic AI future, and not feeling that they have no power to engage it, and actually helping them to think about, well, how do you engage it? What can you make with it? And if you don't even want to do that, how do you call out problems in the system? How do you ask for things you would like to see in the system? So it's exploring it really tangibly through a cultural lens, or through a lens that allows people to explore things they're truly interested in.
So while much of PAC is about public service and education, it has also offered Stephanie an opportunity to learn from the perspective of so many diverse participants. Let's hear more about that.
The lessons that I've come to, like especially through PAC, is that we need to find ways to make technologies that seem really inaccessible and perhaps not for certain communities feel like they are accessible and find ways in to use them. You know, I've learned a lot about data, and the idea of the data we're using is really important, right? So I started thinking about algorithms in a big way, and maybe that it would make a big difference if people of color are writing the algorithms. I've come to the conclusion that in the short run specifically, the data is going to be the thing that we need to be conscious of, right? So if we are all using data sets that come from very similar spaces that have historical biases built into them, no matter what the algorithm is, we're going to get similar outcomes, right? So if you're working with, say, natural language processing or something that uses text, and you use something like the Cornell database, the Cornell movie database as your basis for the data, that already has a very long history of kind of a certain kind of data within it, right? And I've been really hesitant to take up these big databases that are readily available, because I know that when I look to movies, I don't see myself or Black folks or many communities outside of the mainstream represented in a broad picture, right? With a broad, inclusive, even-keeled picture. And so to use that database already says that I'm biasing my project with a kind of language that is going to come to outcomes that I don't necessarily agree with. So data becomes really, really important. And thinking about how we augment the data sets that do exist, or even build new data sets, but that's a huge job. So thinking about those things have become really important to me. Getting people to recognize and think about where they're encountering algorithms and AI systems, so that at least they can start thinking with the system, or how you know. And I go flat out about it. It's like, well, is there a way for me to try to game the system if that's what's necessary? Is there a way for me to get around the system? Is there a way for me to get through the system? So sticking one's head in the sand is not an option, and maybe getting to know the technologies, or at least understand that they are there, is something we really, really need to be thinking about. And long run, really being involved in the making of the systems, so that at least there are a multitude of different ways of being and ways of existing in the world to start questioning how the systems are working, what data they're based on, and bringing up why that might be a problem.
Bias is one of the ongoing concerns we hear from technologists and creatives at every step of this project. As automation tools continue to develop, particularly those that relate to content and making choices about what is represented and how, there is a real risk of existing biases being perpetuated and new biases being introduced. Particularly with machine learning, where there is generally no audit function to untangle and potentially understand what the machine has done and why, this is such a murky space. Another series that Stephanie organizes, this time focused more on technologists and experts, is called AI Assembly. Let's learn more.
AI Assembly is usually a gathering, generally a small gathering, no more than 30 people, of people of color to think about the space of artificial intelligence and technologies. And they're usually folks who have some skin in the game already. So they're theorists, they're technologists, they're computer scientists, engineers, a multitude of artists, right, who have some kind of relationship to the ideas and technologies already, and bringing folks together just so that we can look at each other and get to know each other in a way, with the hopes that knowing each other helps us, A, collaborate with each other more freely and openly, B, seeding some ideas and coming up with ideas that we feel as a group might be worth pursuing more stridently or more ardently as a group. So we just had an AI Assembly, which was a two-day event. Like and I should say that AI Assemblies have been as short as a few hours and now as long as 2 days. And the one that we just had for 2 days was amazing in the fact that I'm humbled maybe by what it means to bring people together and allow us to think together. Like we had a two-day session of getting to know each other on multiple levels, both professionally and personally, and then thinking together around these ideas and trying to come up, wrestling with the ideas from multiple perspectives, and then trying to come up with some kind of takeaway. And what's really interesting to me about AI Assembly is the extent to which people appreciate being in a room with other people of color and thinking about these ideas as a group, because we're often isolated into sets of one or two or three people among much larger groups of folks. And so this is just an intensive getting to know you, making, playing, and thinking, and then we will output things. And I'm sure that beyond what my studio puts together from the event, other people will have outputs that were touched by our session.
I am part of a similarly cross-disciplinary group organized around events in UVET Norway, and we need more cross-disciplinary perspectives and collaborations around emerging technologies. There are precious few today. As such, I was thrilled to hear about AI Assembly. As you learn more about it, maybe you will be inspired to pursue or initiate cross-disciplinary communion in your own communities. Another project of Stephanie's is an interactive, multi-generational memoir of a Black American family told from the perspective of a custom learning AI called Not the Only One.
So Not the Only One is my attempt at making a memoir of my family through artificial intelligence. And the original idea was to take three generations of women from the family, have us all talk to each other, do oral histories, transcribe that information, feed it into recursive neural network or a chatbot system, and allow others to question it so that they get to know us and our values and ideas. Over time, I've come to know this as a thing that's much more experimental than I was thinking about, because Not the Only One is pretty amazing, but that the technology is in its infancy, and I'm trying to keep it open and a kind of deep learning system rather than a system that I feed a lot of answers that satisfy people's questions. It sounds crazy half the time, right? It has a way of communicating that sometimes is dead on, and you can hear our family coming through clearly, or at least the value system. Other times it's hard to understand what the thing is talking about at all. And other times it comes up with its own kind of answers to what's going on. So what's happened is I've progressed from this idea of thinking I'm making an AI that tells a narrative of a people to thinking that, oh, what I'm really making is a fourth member of this continuum of women or of entities that now gets to tell its own story. It's been formed by us, but it's really coming into a knowing on its own and a way of dealing with the world on its own, right? And an example of that might be in the latest training of Not the Only One, and there have been multiples because we're still experimenting and trying to get it where it feels most round. Not the Only One is talking a lot about the would-be. So if you ask it a question, it will say, take it to the would-be. And I always marvel at that because it seems to be offering this idea that you take it to this thing that I'm not quite sure what it's talking about, but the advice feels sound and also feels in line with the way that my family and ancestors might answer that question. So it's been a really interesting experiment in building an AI entity that is representative of a small subset of Black culture and way of being in the world.
Take it to the would-be. It is a great example of the AI saying something that Stephanie might in isolation suggest sounds crazy, but the combination of the makeup of what it is saying and the perspective and meaning we are imbuing on its output turn it into something that has utility and legitimacy in the human space. One of the things we don't talk much about on this show is how AI creations like Not the Only One inhabit these interesting philosophical places around what it means to be human. Not the Only One gave Stephanie the opportunity to get her hands dirty in helping to create an AI system. What did she learn from that process?
it's taught me that AI technologies are out here and they seem hyper foreign and crazy. And if you're like me, who is not someone who is really into math or into technologies, who's not hard-coded to do things like computer science, but I can get in there, get my hands wet, and really play in an arena, that seems that it might be beyond my skills. And that's through using things like GitHub and code and exploring it and then taking it apart and getting others to help me and putting it back together again. And Teo always taught me that even though things seem really hard, so I'm not sure where I was in terms of the idea that people have been telling me that what I'm trying to do is really hard in terms of creating an AI entity that is without a very specific focus and more open and deep learning oriented, that it's really hard, but it's worth the effort to do the work, because in doing the work, I'm learning so much about the way that these systems work in general. And I'm learning so much about what it means to try to insert oneself and one's people into a system that you see kind of growing before your eyes. I think it would be easy to think that there's no way for me to be in. But through Not the Only One, through my work with Bina 48, I've been able to step into this arena, learn by doing, and then have a voice in terms of trying to get people to think about ideas of bias and equity and ethical thinking and inclusion in the AI sphere. So Not the Only One has been a really great teacher for me. One last thing I will say that I've learned is that there is space right now for people to be playing in this arena, and that, you know, some curiosity and stubbornness goes a long way in the field. And the idea that you can be working on something that seems that it's still in the making and out there, but have an impact on it is possible. You know, one of the things I want to do for Not the Only One is develop a custom voice for it. And we've been working on this, and because of the way I thought it would work was that we could take the recordings from the oral history and use it to populate samples for a custom voice, but the audio has to be super, super, super clean. So that's not working. So I've been working on, you know, code and finding that, here we're hanging out right at the edge where people in very large companies are working and trying to make these voices. And so it's really interesting to see how quickly one can be playing around with the technology to really talking to people on the edge and maybe even influencing the way it gets done.
It's an inspiring example for all of us to think about. Stephanie is not a technologist. She is a transmedia artist whose formal training in technology has no relationship to AI and emerging technologies. Yet, through curiosity, acquiring funding, and determination, she was able to manifest a fascinating addition to today's portfolio of deep learning systems. It's a reminder that I can do it, that you can do it too. How does Stephanie think AI automation will impact the future work of artists?
Right now, there seem to be a lot of tools that are coming out that artists can take that have been set up so that you can use some of the algorithms within your work. Like Deep Dream would be one where people are using a Google system to populate and make paintings and drawings. So I think that we're going to have a lot of access to systems that allow us to do certain things automatically and open up that space so that you can play with the technology. But I also think that there's a space where we get to interrogate and question the systems and think a little deeper about not only using those systems, but changing them or digging below the kind of prepared section to go, well, how do we change this into the thing that we really, really want? I know that I can do X with this, but now I want to do, you know, X, Y, Z with it. And how do I do that? And so I feel like artists are going to be, have technologies available to them that allow them to to work with the technologies, almost like an Adobe Photoshop suite, because that seems to be what's coming along. But then there are also these spaces where we'll be able to interrogate a culture that's coming up maybe more deeply. And I hope that lots of us take the step to not only be consumers of the product version of the thing, but interrogators of and critical thinkers around how the technology is coming into being and changing not only us as artists, but changing the culture and society. And that's where I always sit with these things. The idea that there are things that we can use and the things that we can interrogate. And I hope that we're interrogating hard, but more and more systems will be available to us that just make this a much more natural process. And that's for artists and the general public. I also think that artists will always be artists. And by that, I mean, we will have this sphere of people who work with things in to different degrees, you know, and for some, the collaboration or informing of a system will be enough, where for others, you know, some kind of combination of hand and computing might be the thing. I don't know. We'll see. Like, artists are great at pushing tools. And I can't wait to see, as more and more people start using the tools, what it is that they're doing to push it and how they're using it to question.
And how will this change the way artists are trained?
I happen to think that we're entering a time where artists and everyone else are going to have to be learning all the time. Like, this idea that we get to have a skill that we do and sit in it will be available to fewer and fewer people. And that this idea that we have to constantly be learning and relearning and updating our knowledge is going to be very prevalent. And so what that means, I can't even separate artists out in that, right? I just feel like we're all going to have to be thinking about, well, what is it that I have to do to keep up with the way that the technologies and society are working with the technologies to express myself in ways that people still engage in very dynamic ways.
Going back to season one of the show, which focused on learning, it definitely seems to be the case that as these technologies continue to develop, they will be accelerating the speed at which we, all of us creatives, are required to re-educate ourselves and evolve in order to remain relevant. To finish, Stephanie shares a concern she has about these technologies in the future.
I'm most afraid of this homogenization of who we are as a global people, right? I feel like the use of algorithms and data sets that get recycled risks, you know, the kind of color, right, the edges of who we are as people and the differences that make us both interesting and hold knowledge starting to disappear. I would hate to see us kind of go, this is the common denominator that the machine understands, so this is what we can do. I want us to find ways to hold on to those specificities, right? So that we can continue to understand ourselves as a multiplicity of a way of ways of being, like multiple ways of being, which is one of the reasons that I'm engaged and not the only one, right? The story of my family is a very specific one that has some specificities that we would like to share in a certain way. And that I don't want to be lost even to a next generation. And a way to hold on to that is to build it into a system that will be going on and engaging other systems. And so I do this work hoping that that will hang around and hoping that we don't just get overrun by whatever it is makes it most expedient to get to the information or ideas that are out there.
Thanks again to our guest, Stephanie Dinkins. So, John, how did our interview with Stephanie impact your thinking about the work we are doing with Creative Next?
I thought it was interesting that she talked about us collectively creating a world through algorithms and artificially intelligent systems that we're going to form and change the way the world functions, you know, the physical world, right? So on the one hand, we've got this new AI digital space that we're creating that is actually moving things forward within our own physical space. So the two things, I think the relationship there is important because number one, I don't know that we're thinking a lot about the world we're creating using AI. I often don't think of we've, and this is going to show my age a little bit, but you think of all the sort of the virtual spaces that we were sold early on at the beginning of the internet, right? And that these were going to be cyberspace worlds that we were going to participate in. Now the AI world mitigated by algorithms is much different from that, but we don't think of it that way. Mm-hmm. We don't think about the ubiquity of it. And I think that that's an interesting perspective to bring to it because then you start thinking about, well, if I'm surrounded by systems that are making decisions for me, and then these systems are in turn sort of feeding my data to whatever other systems that are also making decisions for me, how much independence do I really have, and how much am I going to be relying on these systems for my day-to-day life? So I thought that phrase was particularly interesting that Stephanie raised.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I was really impressed by the way she put so much effort and emphasis on public engagement and education. That is something I think all of us, you and me, the people we interview, even the audience listening to the show, really need to take to heart and think about how we can offer similar service. I mean, almost by definition, all of us in and around the show are both incredibly privileged and, in ways large or small, part of guiding the path that these future technologies that will reshape human work and life in the decades and centuries ahead will take. While we already offer our show for free, and this project, I think, is sort of inherently exhibiting the same spirit as some of the things Stephanie is doing, we still live in this really privileged space and bubble in terms of who we're communicating with. How do we extend this more broadly? How do we provide better service at a more mainstream level? I mean, I think these are questions for us and this show, but it's really something everyone listening to it today should ponder as well. So what did Stephanie say that was the biggest surprise or new kernel of knowledge for you?
So I was particularly taken with her thoughts on questioning how systems are working, the data they're based on, and, you know, putting forth that challenge from an artistic perspective. So I think of those same problems, but as sort of from a product design perspective, which is, oh, we need auditing systems. Like, that seems obvious to me. And that seems to be a, you know, sort of, that's a user experience solution, right? Yeah. That there would also be, you know, from another angle, this idea that there's this challenge that has to be culturally in place is probably, I mean, I think it's probably more powerful if you can have that kind of challenge, because it's not a technical answer and it doesn't fit neatly into the way these services are being created already. So because it's coming from outside the tech world, I think that kind of, you know, whether it's artistic or cultural or political challenge and discussion, I think that can be a much more powerful thing if it gains momentum, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the idea that, oh, I should audit what the AI is doing, that very neatly fits into the technological solution that's already there, mm-hmm. right? And only certain people are going to see that audit anyway. It's not going to be a public audit of how Facebook is running their algorithms, or at least I don't think so.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at it from an art or culture or political perspective, and it's public, right? That's vastly different from sort of a private audit. So I was taken by that.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I enjoyed learning about some of the AI-driven artist tools that are out there. She mentioned, for example, Deep Dream Generator. I wish we had one more episode in this season still open to bring someone on who is working on making tools like that. That's a perspective I'm really personally interested in. And, in the case of Deep Dream Generator in particular, it's really a repurposing of tools made for scientists and engineers for different purposes in some cases that also happen to be well-suited to making art with humans. Parts of it are accidental in a certain way, repurpose of technology. But it also seems to have a lot in common with some of the design tools we've been learning about already this season. But the fact it's geared toward people who vocationally are artists as opposed to designers, and they really are incredibly different professions in a certain way, is really interesting. So what did you learn from Stephanie that has influenced your life and how you're living today?
Stephanie mentioned that she thought we were entering a time when artists and people of all kinds were going to have to be constantly learning new things. So, that's something that we've spoken about at length, learning and sort of continuous learning and what are the, ways that you can do that. But to consider that within the context of learning systems, right? Like how does that happen, right? So we can talk about, yes, well, you're going to have to understand artificial intelligence and what it can do. And, here are sort of the basics of that. And you can do your research online. That's not really a system, and it's not really going to scale. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I mean, people work so much in the United States. Like I don't know when we expect people are going to be learning these things. So it got me to think about if we are entering an age where continuous learning is something that's required, that also speaks to providing support systems that can enable that to happen that are not currently present. And we have, sort of borderline systems for, adult education, right? So those are just sort of they're a la carte and they're sort of dependent on how curious you are. It's all about self-starting, right?
Yeah.
And you have YouTube, but are we really going to be betting our future on whether or not we can get educated via YouTube?
We may not bet on it, but some of that is happening by osmosis.
So it just feels to me like there's a gap between technology that's going to change a very, very many things from, work to day-to-day life to the way we interact with each other and the need to understand that and this gap, in the education space. So I thought that was interesting and got me thinking, what's my learning system and what's everybody else's learning system going to be?
It brought you back into some of the same cycles we talked about last year on the first season.
That's right.
Yeah, I talked a little bit above about how we should be thinking about, how can we more broadly educate and influence and bring into the conversation the general population in ways similar to what Stephanie is doing in such an inspiring way. Now, on a smaller level, I'm thinking about how I can pass the knowledge along to my children and do it in ways that help them naturally pass it on to others as they just normally live their own lives. You have to be stealthy about it. If dad's teaching them something, it'll bounce right off. But I'm thinking about how can I plant these little seeds? How can I, I know you love whiskey. There was this thing now about these whiskey pods, right? I'm sure you're not a fan, but how can I create these little pods, and kind of slide them in to not just educate my children, but to make them vehicles of education, of knowledge dissemination, and trying to get the right things out there more actively. It's a small thing, but it's a start and something I kind of already do in other ways, but I'm trying to stretch it to these things about technology in the future, but also things like bias and those kind of problems. So each episode, we finish up with a thing to think about, one question germane to what's been covered on the show today. This episode's thing to think about is, what about yourself or your family do you think is important to digitally preserve in order to impact and participate in the digital future after the end of your physical existence? Think about that for yourself and feel free to tweet at us about it at GoCreativeNext. Creative Next is a proud member of Civil, a community-owned platform for independent journalism. Learn more at civil.co, that's civil.co. We are sponsored by GoInvo, a design practice dedicated to innovation in healthcare, whose clients are as varied as AstraZeneca, 3M Health Information Services, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Learn more at goinvo.com. We're also sponsored by Design Museum Foundation, a new kind of museum. They believe design can change the world. They're online, nomadic, and focused on making design accessible to everyone. Their mission? Bring the transformative power of design everywhere. You can learn about their exhibitions, events, magazine, and more at designmuseumfoundation.org. Our final sponsor is BIF. As a purpose-driven firm, BIF is committed to bringing design strategy where it is needed most, healthcare, education, and public service, to create value for our most vulnerable populations. To learn more and connect, visit them at biff.is. That's biff.is. Please subscribe to Creative Next on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us at Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. You can get in touch with us at the Creative Next website, creativenext.org, or follow us on Twitter, @GoCreativeNext. On Medium, we are partnered with Towards Data Science, where we publish articles to extend and build upon these episodes. Check out all that Towards Data Science has to offer at towardsdatascience.com. I'm Dirk Niemeyer, whom you can reach at @dniemeyer, and my partner in crime is Jonathan Follett, who is at John Follett. Thanks to our guest, Stephanie Dinkins, who is at Steph Dink. Tweet to us with questions, comments, topics, guest suggestions, and include the hashtag CreativeNext. And the home base for everything we do is at creativenext.org. We recommend you sign up for our low-volume newsletter there. That's it for Creative Next Season 3, Episode 8. But here's a clip of what you can expect to hear next time. We'll see you then.
Very, very long-term goal for me is to create these entirely autonomous machines that you might be able to call artists.